Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome back my next guest, Bill Springer. He is a senior contributor at Forbes and now an influencer, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, in my own mind, I guess.
Well, it's I have to say, you know, when I went to look you up, because I wanted to talk about the Grand Prix and Formula One in Miami. And I went to look you up and I was looking you up under Billy Swizzle, because that's what you go by as well. And I completely forgot that your actual name was Bill Springer. So yeah. You're influencing for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Billy Swizzle is my rock star alter ego's name. And I came up with that, you know, when social media first started, when I first opened all my social media accounts, because I was in a really bad band, like a dad band. and I wore wigs and all sorts of like rock star gear, and I acted like a rock star, and it was really fun. I was working at a magazine, a sailing magazine at the time. I was the head boat tester. I had a lot of kind of credibility. I had to be the expert. So I didn't want people to see that I was also in this horrible dad band wearing wigs and stuff. So I was like, I came up with the stage name Billy Swizzle, and had all my social media be that. And it's honestly, it's been really fun to be Billy Swizzle, to have that sort of persona in social media, but also to be, you know, the really serious super yacht writer.
So you're like dual personalities. That's, you know, you're pretty lucky.
No, it's not dual. It's who I am. You know, yeah. like I am Billy Swizzle. Like I do wear all of. I enjoy like kind of showing off and wearing the jackets and having fun. And I just enjoy that. So like, that's kind of who I am, but I'm also Bill Springer, the writer that writes about super yachts, and that I'm really grateful to be able to do all the stuff that I do.
Well, you do a great job at doing well. And speaking of which, I mean, I saw a couple of shots of you at the Miami Grand Prix. Well, your feet actually.
Yes.
Right. What was that like? Yeah. I've read the stories, and I did sort of a little piece on it last night. In the pictures, it really looks kind of tacky, to be honest with you.
You know, it wasn't. It was absolutely, I mean, maybe tacky, but in a okay way. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's really nothing elegant about a big event of any kind like that. I mean, there was hundreds of thousands of people there. It was a sprawling venue. It was Miami. It was the first one. So there was a lot of just trying to out F1, you know, so everything was over the top. So was it tacky? Yeah. But was it like spot on tacky, like appropriate tacky? Yes, it was. It was great. It really was great. And I'll tell you, I talked to a lot of the sort of really veteran Formula One writers, and they all said that this event was one of the best events that I'd ever seen, which says a lot, because those guys are pretty jaded.
I can imagine I'm fairly picky as well, considering they probably get VIP service wherever they go.
Exactly. Right. So it was really good.
The one thing that I didn't really understand, though, is that Miami has such an amazing flavor itself. You know, it's got such heritage and such beauty. And I didn't really understand why they were so insistent on trying to mimic a Monaco-esque, you know, type event, because there's Monaco. Monaco's Monaco. That is over the top, lush, over the top, you know, money. It's, you know, you've got the real water, and it's not these little tender sized boats sitting in the real water. These are massive super yachts, the size of small apartments. So I just didn't quite understand what the need, the absolute desire to try to mimic that kind of thing in the center. And because there was no way that they were ever going to make it look like Monaco, not in a million years.
You know, I don't know if they were trying to make it look like, maybe they were inspired by Monaco. I mean, this was a commercial event. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the deal. Whether it was the beach club or the yacht club or all the hospitality villas or you name it, the idea was to put on an event that would attract sponsorship and partners. Right. And I know because I spent a couple of days on the yachts in the yacht club. It was awesome.
Really?
It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, the whole F1 experience, whether it's Monaco, wherever you go, is going to be stimulation overload, yeah. Right? I mean, no matter what event it is, there is stimulation overload. And there was stimulation overload in Miami for sure. But the cool thing about the yacht club, you know, yeah, they're small yachts and they were on a trailer and they had this crazy water-esque kind of floor and it all looked really phony and fake.
Yeah.
Because it was phony and fake. But at the same time, it was probably the best place to watch the race in the entire venue. Because it was on the best turns on the track.
Yeah.
I mean, you were probably 15 feet from the track. And unlike all the hospitality tents and the, you know, they built amazing structures for the hospitality all over the event. Unlike all those other places that were truly crammed with people, even the super VIP places were crammed with people, there was only 180 people allowed in the yacht club.
Wow.
So you had the entire best corner in the race to yourself while the craziness was going on all around you. It was great. It really was great. I mean, I'm not sure that they knew what they were getting into with the yacht club, but it was a huge success in my view. And I've talked to all the people that had the boats in there and they said the same because they were able to give either their owners, Midnight Express, Azimut, Barton and Gray, membership club, Denison Yachting. Was there one other? Were able to bring their VIP clients and give them an experience that no one else could have. So from a marketing perspective for those brands, it was a huge success. And it was fun. It was really fun.
And it was the whole weekend, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it, you know, like, as you know, with F1, every day gets progressively more hyped up and more energy and more vibes. So by, you know, race day, people were just really, really psyched.
Well, I have to admit, you know, I don't really know a lot about Formula One because it's not my thing. You know, when I was a kid, I used to compete in hit to pass events, which is where you get in a really crappy little car. And the only way you can pass the person in front of you is if you smash into them. I really enjoyed that. It was fun. but as far as these fancy cars, you know, they're cool. But when I went to look on social media to do a bit of research, not social media, the internet, the one thing that sort of overtook the fact that this was a race and a car race and one of the most iconic car races in the world was this bloody marina. That's, yeah. I mean, the headlines straight across, you've got CNN, you've got Forbes, you've got, you know, BBC, the biggest, you know, Fox News, et cetera, the biggest media outlets in the world. They weren't talking about who won the race. They weren't they weren't talking who was going to be in the race. All they were talking about was this yacht club.
Yeah.
It overshadowed everything.
Yeah. I mean, if you were one of the 10 boats that was in that yacht club, that's pretty good ROI. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll see what happens next year. You know what I mean? But I can't see them doing anything differently because it was such a big hit.
And I saw that, you know, you even had a visit there from Michelle Obama.
Yes.
There's quite a bit of star power there.
The star power there was unlike anything I've seen before. So I was down on the grid right before the race. So that's the most exclusive invite you can get. Being in the grid before the F1 is the who's who of whatever celebrities are there. And the star power there was insane. So it was everyone from Matt Damon to Will.i.am, to Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, like the A-list celebrities. And that's because Miami is a uniquely American kind of magnet for this sort of thing. Like F1 and Miami are really a good match. And I bet Vegas will be as well. But yeah, so I mean, it blew my mind just walking around the paddock. And another thing that was interesting was that even these superstars were kind of starstruck being on the grid and seeing the cars and seeing each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was really kind of cool because it's the first one in Miami, and America is ripe, or was just so ready for Formula One based on all the success of Drive to Survive, the Netflix series.
Yeah, it comes on the heels of that. But I can imagine the star power, because most of the times that these types of people meet, they are meeting on a red carpet or some charity event where it's all very formal and all, you know, they have to be the best they can be. And there's, you know, a million press milling around and they're going to be critiqued on what they're wearing later. And in this environment, I guess that would be completely different. They were there.
Totally.
They weren't the stars. The stars were the race car drivers and the cars themselves.
That's exactly right. And it was hot as hell. I mean, it was just like, you know, we're all out there where it's crowded, it's hot, you know, you're bumping into people. I mean, I bumped into Pharrell, you know what I mean? You're just like, oh, excuse me. And it's hot. And, you know, the cars are going, you know, so it's like, again, that stimulation overload, which is really kind of intoxicating.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, what do you see is going to happen in Vegas now? Like this is just sort of blowing up in the
US now. Well, I mean, the Formula One sort of itself is owned by an American company.
Yeah.
And the American market is a really big market, you know, newsflash. There's three races in the States now. I could see Vegas probably being even more over the top than Miami. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Are you planning on attending?
Maybe. Like, my sort of focus and my interest in Formula One comes from the super yacht world. So yeah. That's where I have my expertise. That's where I, you know, sort of, that's my happy place. But because I'm fascinated by the way things kind of connect together. So the super yachts and Formula One, there's so many overlaps and so many interesting sort of connections between those two worlds. I'm doing a whole series of stories on those kind of connections. So the places that are interesting to me would be obviously Monaco, Miami, Abu Dhabi. Those would be the main ones that would sort of have that sort of yachting connection. But I don't know, if I get invited to Vegas, I'll probably go.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been to Vegas a number of times. It's where I grew up. It was just one short plane ride away. And that was sort of, you know, I guess I would imagine it's like people in Europe flying to Mallorca, you know, for the weekend. It's the same sort of deal, right? So we would go to Vegas for a crazy weekend. And I mean, that place, there's nothing in the world that is like Vegas. There really is not a single thing in the world that is like Vegas. And I think there are other places that have tried to replicate it, but they will never come close, never come close. And the only way that Vegas is going to be destroyed is if they run out of water, which could actually happen soon. But, you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, if you get the chance to go, I would definitely go, because I'll get you to report back to me on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, you know, there's nothing like Vegas and there's nothing like Formula One.
Yeah.
And putting those two things together is like a nuclear bomb of sort of excitement and hype and over the topness.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what are you up to next then? What's your next sort of move?
Oh, so tomorrow I'm flying from my short little flight from Boston to Bermuda for the Sail GP season opener. So I'm really psyched about that. And it's kind of neat how it's fallen right after the Automotive Grand Prix, because that's another one of those similarities, connections between cars and yachts that is a really interesting sort of subject that I'm really psyched to be checking out. So I'll be in Bermuda, hopefully sailing 50 miles an hour on a hydrofoiling Sail GP catamaran and reporting back on that stuff.
Those hydrofoils, I mean, you know, I've sort of watched the industry for the last 15 years, and I tell you, wow. And it's just really sped up to see those boats on the, they're flying. I mean, they're not actually even touching the water. They're literally flying over the water. It's insane. Right.
Well, they're flying in every way because they don't have sails. They have wings, rigid wings that are just super efficient. The foils, the boats are up on the water, up on the foils. It's truly flying. It's three-dimensional sailing. It's just, it's really cool. Very, very cool.
Everything is getting faster and faster and faster, you know? I mean, from cars to, do you think that both the car and the yachting industry are going to, in the high race sort of concept, not in, you know, regular Johnny has to go to the store kind of idea, but do you think that they're going to start steering a little bit more to an more environmental friendly format?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know about the racing, but just hydrofoiling, it's a great segue, actually, because hydrofoiling and electric propulsion in boats people have been working on it for a long time. And I've actually went to Sweden to Candela Yachts. So Candela Yachts has developed a hydrofoiling electric boat. It's about 8 meters that can go 50 miles at 20 knots. So in the electric propulsion world, that is quantum leap forward because they're the boat hydrofoils. So yes, there's lots of work in that area. And there's a lot of real, like they've really cracked the code on that stuff. Because the hydrofoiling boats are so much more efficient. So you can get a lot more range and a lot more speed out of the very finite amount of battery capacity that electric boats have.
Well, I guess when you take a look at it, the F1 and the GP, it's both about speed. It's the need for speed. And one thing about, you know, the only other alternatives to energy is that they haven't figured out how to get the speed out of it yet.
Right.
So I can't imagine that either one will change immensely anytime soon until we have, you know, we move forward, I think.
Well, there is Formula E car racing. So the electric cars, honestly, are faster. But they don't have the sound. The sound of a Formula One car that rattles your chest, it's that may be the single most powerful thing about the whole experience. And I think what you were saying about speed, both Sail GP and Formula One, it's about power, you know, like raw horsepower. And that's something that's always going to be attractive. And that's kind of hard to sort of replicate or sort of come up with something else that people want more than that. But we'll see.
I can imagine. Well, yeah, because I know even in regular cars, I mean, I've always been run over by a regular car before because I didn't hear it coming.
Right.
And, you know, I am going deaf in my old age, but I'm not that deaf. I can usually hear a car coming, right? But they're silent.
Yeah. And I mean, I know just from being so close to the track, and just being in the track environment, having the background noise of the cars going around, it's cool. It's just cool.
Well, and near the track too. I mean, I grew up in a logging yard. So of course my father had a big, huge garage that he worked on everything. And there is just something about that smell of, you know, you've got the rubber burning, so toxic, but you've got the rubber burning, you've got the smell of gas, you've got oil, you've got the tools clanking. It tends to rev you up a little bit. It gets you a little bit excited.
Yeah, totally.
So, and it's part of the experience. I mean, we human beings, we're all about what we taste, smell, and see.
Right. And feel.
Because it's like, I don't know. It's like a rocket going by you. You know, when a car goes by you really, really fast, there's a wind. There's or a boat as well.
It takes your breath away. Yep.
Yeah. So I can imagine it's something that probably, unless they perfect it, we'll never see a change.
Yeah. I mean, they could make these cars silent now. The gas powered, but I mean, and even from what I've heard, the cars now are so much, they aren't as growly as the previous, you know, like the older cars, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, I did a, and I actually bumped into Richard Mille on the grid. So Richard, it makes watches for Pharrell and for all those guys. And he's incredibly involved with F1 in every level, whether it's the highest level, but also he's got a women's team. He's very involved with the historic F1 circuit, which is huge as well. But I did a story with him because he owns 160 classic Formula One cars, 160 of them. And he said, Bill, he likes the cars from the golden age, from about 1965 until about 1980, because the sounds that they make, the way that each car was different, each was like this work of art. He's like, Bill, the cars in those days were beautiful and they were unique and they had soul. Whereas now the cars are much more computer created and they're all exactly the same. So the cars in the past were even more growly and more kind of revvy, but I don't think they'll ever get rid of it all for sure.
No, well, I mean, you know, even me, and I'm really conscious about the environment, and I think if I were ever to buy a car again, it has been my dream, I would search the four corners of the earth for a Mustang 67 convertible.
Oh, really?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a machine. And you can hear the difference because, you know, you see other Mustangs, the newer Mustangs going around, and they just lost that classic. I don't know. They were sexy and they were beasts, you know, but they went fast. They looked good. And you heard them coming a mile away.
Right, right. Well, you know, I have a friend who has an electric Mustang now, and it doesn't, I mean, it's like, it doesn't even make sense, you know?
Yeah, it's not, a Mustang is a Mustang, and he's right, you know, the classics are, and when something broke down, you could fix it, you know?
Right, right, right.
Like, mechanics actually made a great living back then. It wasn't electronics, it was mechanics, you know? You went in and you needed a new lug nut or, you know, whatever other part of the machine needed fixing. It was just a matter of replacing that bit and tightening it all up, and off you went again. Yeah. Now you've got to get the entire computer system rebooted, and you know, maybe then we'll have to troubleshoot something else. And yeah, it's definitely changed, and you are right in the fact that the classics are where it's at.
Richard is right.
Sorry. I mean, knowing us, we both are classics. So, I'm going to agree with him.
Yeah.
Mind you, I wasn't born in 67. I was born way after 67. So we'll get that straight out.
Well, I was born in 68, so I'm pretty close.
Well, you still weren't born in 67. You're not supposed to say those things because then I have to share.
No, you don't. I mean, I don't care. It's like, I mean, I'm old and I don't embrace it, but I don't run away from it either.
Yeah, no, me either. I had my 50th birthday at the end of December. It's weird though, do you know? I mean, talking was totally off topic, sorry to the audience, but I think that today's day and age, when you get to be 40 or 50 is a hell of a lot different than when our parents got to be 40 or 50.
Yeah, right.
You know, because they were old.
Yeah.
Like, you know, their whole lifestyle was, you know, they'd settled down and they were looking forward to being grandparents, and they were in the suburbs and they took their vacation every year. And
they drank martinis and smoked cigarettes and ate like 17 pounds of butter every day.
Yeah. But, it was a different era. And now I look around and I see people that are, you know, even 60, that you would swear that they were 40, but it's just, it's different.
Yeah, it's different.
I don't know what it is, but then I look in the mirror and I'm sure that I probably don't see what other people see.
It's a super yacht lifestyle. It's a super yacht lifestyle. It keeps you young.
Yeah, you do better than I do. It's got to come with a certain je ne sais quoi, and I don't have it. Bill, I have to say it's been an absolute pleasure as per always.
Well, same for me. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, well, you know what? We'll have to do this a little bit more often because, you know, you're traveling. Every time I check in on you, you're traveling here, there, and everywhere, and I see some random pictures. I think you got photobombed as well at Miami, didn't you?
No, I didn't get photobombed. I did the photobombing.
Oh, right,
I was on the grid with all the celebs, so, like, Will.i.am was getting interviewed, and all my friends saw me on TV in the background because, you know, I was just milling around as well. So I got all these random calls from people who were like, I saw you on TV, you know. So I was a photo bomber, not the photo bomb-y.
Right. Well, yeah, I did see that picture. You looked a bit dazed and confused, to be honest.
Yeah, I was.
Right, Bill. Well, enjoy Sail GP, and maybe you'll send us a picture of you flying along the high seas.
Yeah, I'll send you a video.
Brilliant. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll provide Bill's information below this interview when it airs. And you've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.